Welcome to podcast 25 of the House Einstein podcast. Would You Be My Neighbor is our working title for this week's podcast. I am Osman with House Einstein, and with me is Hamish Crabb.
Hello, hello.
And if this is your first time joining us on the House Einstein podcast, I am a realtor here in Boulder, and I'm the founder of House Einstein, a boutique real estate brokerage serving Boulder, Denver, Boulder County, and some of the mountain resort towns, including Breckenridge and Winter Park. And I've been doing this about 20 years, and if you want to learn more about us, at House Einstein and what we do, visit us at houseeinstein.com. And Hamish, what's your job here?
I'm Hamish. I've been here for 21 years. Nope, 21 months. I'm a licensed agent, and I help keep the team running smoothly. So I'll handle showings. I'll help draft contracts. I'll do the bulk of the marketing and just make sure everybody's chugging along.
And it's pretty adorable that you still count the months. You could just round up the years at this point, Hamish, and say about 2 years. I think that would be fine. Not yet. Okay. All right. Earn it.
Yeah. We'll go down to the days next time. Yeah. Next podcast, I'll have it down by the days.
Okay. All right. Fair enough. We're a little behind on publication schedules. So by the time you hear this, it's probably going to be maybe as much as 3 weeks. We're going to keep accelerating our publication schedule so that we're getting caught up because we got a little delayed. Hamish had jury duty and I was traveling out of the country. And so things got a little behind with our podcasting publication schedule. The recording continued, but the publication – well, I guess the recording didn't really continue, but the publication has fallen behind.
The backlog endured.
So. And the newsletter has been far behind. So hopefully by the time you hear this, there'll be at least one newsletter out for you to review. And you can sign up for our House Einstein newsletter at the House Einstein website. You'll see it on the top right if you'd like to see our written content. All right. So this week, we're going to be talking about a variety of things. But before I walk you through our topics, let me add in our usual disclosure that this podcast is entertainment. It is not intended as legal advice, real estate advice, spiritual advice, relationship advice. We're not qualified. You're not our client if you're just listening to this. And even though we are qualified as real estate agents and realtors here in Boulder, it doesn't mean that that's the advice we're giving you. Treat this as entertainment. And if you are a client, please pick up the phone, send me an email, send me a text message. You know how to reach me. And we'll give you real estate advice specific to your unique situation.
That goes if you're also not a client, you can give us a call. Our contact info is in the About Us tab on our website as well.
That's right. If you'd like to become a client, just the easiest and smartest way to reach me is to call me. Every day I get probably 20 spam messages in my text. I get tons of email, and most of that is now spam as well, although I'm filtering for clients and doing my best to never miss a client email. But because there's so much spam that is directed at me particularly, picking up the phone and calling me and leaving a voicemail is the absolute best way to reach me. You will get voicemail because unless you're already in my contacts, my phone won't even ring. But my phone number is quite easily found at houseeinstein.com. Go ahead and call, and I'm more than happy to talk to you about your unique real estate situation.
Sweet.
Okay, let's talk about the topics. All right, we've done our intros here. This week, we're going to be talking about the listing of the week. This is a new feature for the House Einstein podcast. We have not done it before. It's sort of a hybrid for what we had been doing in our newsletter. And I think it's important to discuss listings. We can't talk about active listings in a way that is critical or even not critical of active listings. Real estate agents are prohibited from doing that, especially if they're realtors. It's an ethics rule. But we can talk about closed listings, deals that are no longer active. We can talk about those in detail and we can release that information publicly. Discussion of active listings historically has only been in the newsletter, and that is with people who have provided their information in the context of either already being a client or prospective clients that would like to hear our thoughts about active listings. But this is a new feature, listing of the week. And we'll also be talking about the most recent election that just occurred in the city of Boulder and some of the topics, some of the proposals and candidates. There's a little bit of city politics. It's a dangerous topic for us to talk about, but we're going to talk about it anyway. And we're going to be talking about demographics and neighborhoods. That's where the topic of this week's podcast comes from. Would you be my neighbor? And some of our experiences in working with buyers and sellers around demographics and neighborhoods. And then we're going to talk a little bit about the North Boulder Library. Construction is nearing the end. It's now enclosed. And I suspect it'll still be at least 6 months before it's open, but we're almost there. And the impact on the North Boulder community, Uptown Broadway, the Holiday neighborhood, all of that we'll discuss in that topic. And then if we have time, and I'm not sure we will because we're going to try to keep this to an hour. If we have time, we're going to talk about historic remodels, four squares, the cost of remodeling and reconstruction in the city of Boulder, the timeline that is required to undertake or at least set your expectations for a timeline if that's a project that interests you. So we'll be talking about that if we have time. If not, we're going to save it for next week because we respect you as a listener and we want our podcast to be about an hour.
That's right. And a little thank you to everybody who continues to listen. The last two podcasts have gotten a decent amount of, I'd call it traction, just in the first few days of posting, which is really neat to see.
It is neat to see. And I love the personal feedback I've gotten from past clients. I've heard from multiple new clients this year that's how they found us was the podcast. And I never thought podcasting was a thing. I mean, obviously there's massive platforms for people with successful podcasts, but who knew that a podcast that's mostly about real estate matters in Colorado and Denver and Boulder and in the mountain towns, why that would get such traction. But I guess we're also we're also talking about real estate on the national level. One thing I've said this before and I'll say it again. A lot of what we talk about relates to real estate as it's practiced in the state of Colorado, and real estate's regulated on the state level. So if you're in Texas or New York or Massachusetts or any other state, what we say may or may not apply. So keep that in mind.
Yeah. Well, November 7th was election day, and not just for Boulder, too, for the whole state. And I threw in my ballot, I think I did it on the 28th or so of October. I was early with it. And at least in Westminster, none of the people I voted for made it.
That really makes me wonder how you're voting, Hamish. We've never talked about politics before. With that said, it doesn't matter what your politics are. I welcome you on the team, and you certainly are. Don't feel like you have to share your politics, but I'll share mine. Go ahead.
Also, local government's far less partisan and a lot more. I guess it's local. It's on the ground, so it's different. So it's an interesting thing. Go ahead.
For sure. So politically, if you think about what constitutes a spectrum from left to right and where center is, when it comes to fiscal matters, I'm probably slightly right of center. And when it comes to social matters, I'm probably left of center to some degree. And that's roughly where I stand on most matters. We are more than happy to serve clients of all religions, all colors, all gender orientations, and thrilled that you've chosen us as a client, and we'll do our best for you. Even if we don't agree with your politics, by the way, we will do our best for you because that's how we roll at House Einstein. We are very inclusive and welcome diversity.
Hmm. So I've spoken a little bit about Westminster's election. I think probably if we're relating back to Colorado's most recent election, the largest the most attention has gone towards Proposition HH. Proposition 2 as well was in the ballot, though, you know, scrolling on Twitter, now X, all I see is Proposition HH. Oz, do you have a simplified summary of it, if that's possible? Because most news places have a difficulty even explaining it.
Well, not only difficulty explaining it, but continue to reiterate this political position that is just garbage. I don't know what else to say. It's complete garbage, and it's insulting to intelligent voters that can read through the smoke screen of the actual impact of this proposition. So I don't need to go into a lot of detail on it, but that's what I found really offensive about it. Like, if they want to, if they want more tax revenue to stay at the state, they should simply just stay that. Tabor and the Gallagher Amendment to Tabor were very popular. Tabor was a very popular measure. The Gallagher Amendment was controversial, and we continue to see what I think of as disrespectful legislation that comes from the state that they want us to vote on that are end runs around Tabor, the tax bill, the taxpayer bill of rights. And so anytime I see that occurring, I vote against it because I feel like it's insulting to me and my intelligence as a voter. And I feel like that Colorado in general does the same. There was about $500,000 of spending by some conservative group to illuminate this issue because clearly it had been designed to be deceptive. And even now the newspapers are spinning it like, oh, Coloradans must be so dumb. They just don't want their tax money back. That's not the case at all. And it's offensive. And that's all I'm going to say about it is I'm glad to see it get shot down. And if you want us to spend money on certain things, then just say that's what you want us to spend money on and treat us with intelligence and the voters will respond with intelligence. But stop trying to fool us stop with the deception when it comes to legislation in the state of Colorado and nationally too. But
the carrot on the stick for those unfamiliar was lower property taxes, which, I mean, how many appeals did we do this year? So it was a pretty convincing one. Though, yeah, you look a little bit further.
I didn't think it was convincing. I thought it was, all you had to do was plug in your income and your property tax rate into calculators, and you could see the impact. And it was, again, deceptive. So, Hamish, you mentioned Westminster, and I want to clarify that I don't pay a lot of attention to City of Westminster politics. I pay a lot of attention to City of Boulder because that's where my investment properties are, and I live right outside the city limits now. We bought in 2020 just outside the city limits, so I can't actually vote in city council elections anymore. Much to my wife's relief, I can't run for office in the city either. I'm at the county level, and so I couldn't vote for any of the city council candidates. But I think that's enough about Proposition H and all the other ones. It's now in the rearview mirror, and I think we've stated our position on it. But maybe we should talk about city council and local politics and some of the rules that have changed recently, beginning in August in the city of Boulder, where the occupancy limit was raised effectively to 5 in most locations in the city of Boulder. It's been 3 maximum unrelated occupants for rental properties, essentially, prior to that, for many, many years, for decades, we've had that 3 maximum unrelated people in a home, and it was finally lifted to 5. And honestly, I don't even know how legally enforceable it is anyway. If someone were to challenge it, I don't know if the city can tell you who you can and cannot live with. But ultimately, in August, it was raised to 5. And then most recently, the city also voted, council also voted, I think, 8-1 to eliminate, to effectively eliminate single family zoning and allow duplexes and triplexes in single family neighborhoods. But because those neighborhoods are still subject to density restrictions, setbacks, and density, it's not going to result in some landslide of ADUs being built. It's a step in the direction of a lot more density in the city. And that is something a lot of progressives want to see. And a lot of people that are not progressive and homeowners who bought here decades ago and are happy with our city being smaller don't want to see. And that battle continues to play out.
Maybe, do you see prior to ADUs popping up everywhere, would this just be more of a case for kind of a walkout basement situation with a separate living spaces between the two stories?
Yeah, that's one form of ADU. There are complete detached accessory dwelling units as well. Mm-hmm. There are also duplexes and triplexes that are possible multifamily living situations. I was just touring a house today that was a remodeled 4-square, and the neighbor in the 70s added 3 townhome units on the back of a historic house, And that particular project was why the neighborhood got together and created zoning restrictions, because they didn't want to see that happen everywhere. And you look at this thing, and it's sort of a monstrosity. On the front, there's a really attractive historic home. And on the back, it's townhome that are modern. And the two in the middle are now, and that, you, people are going to know exactly where I am, but two in the middle rebuilt because they burned. Like about 8 years ago, they burned down. And then the one in the end is not. It's still from the 70s. And so it's Frankenhaus. I'm sure it's a giant cash cow to the owner, but it's also Frankenhaus, and it did create a lot more density, and quality of life is just fine. Probably better than the 70s, but there's a lot more people living in Boulder than they were in the 70s. And if the candidates we keep electing keep voting to reduce restrictions, we'll see a lot more construction in the city.
It's interesting. Boulder's got a few height limits, to my understanding, right, throughout the city, as far as, you know, there's some solar rights, and are there like view rights as well, or is it more?
No.
Okay.
You do not legally buy a view, but you're right about the other restrictions. So residential properties are typically limited, I think, at 35 feet from the lowest point on the lot. And that last part of the sentence there, the lowest point on the lot, is vital when you're thinking about a home that you want to add a second story on, because if it's a steeply sloped lot, they count to the bottom of the driveway or the top of the driveway, wherever the lowest point is where the height begins. And that can have a major impact on how tall your house can be. You're also not allowed to shade your neighbor's lot more than a 6-foot fence. This is called the solar access rules. I think they do the solar equinoxes. They measure shadow heights, shadow lengths on your neighbor's lot, and you're not allowed to shadow your neighbor any more than a 6-foot fence. And then there's all sorts of other rules. There are green building rules. There's compatible development, which are density related rules. There's the normal setbacks. I mean, the rules go on and on and on. I know enough to be dangerous. And if our clients are serious, we always put them in touch with an architect before the contingency expires, because we can't be liable if we got this wrong. But you want to understand the building envelope. And some local architects, for a fee, a relatively modest one, will actually write up a document that will show you specifically what the envelope is to build out that property, including height limits.
Mm. Yeah, it's you brought up the lowest point of the lot, and I immediately thought of, there's a house that was built around 2018 in Broomfield, and I'm sure in the neighborhood there is a restriction on the height of the fence. So what they did is built a 4-foot berm around the entire perimeter of the property and then put a fence on top of it. And I imagine there's some provision Boulder's got where that's restricted. But
oh, yeah. Well, also, but see, that's what people do. You make a rule and people figure out how to circumvent it. So popular properties, particularly in Table Mesa, are properties that are sitting on a perch. And the problem is that the home might have been built prior to these height limit rules going in play. So, and this is actually not just Table Mesa. We've seen it right downtown, where basically what will happen is the builder will come in and put the top of the house on stilts, right? And then they will rebuild the house entirely around the top of that house. And then they'll finish it off like icing on the cake or a birthday candle on the top. They'll finish the top after the rest of the house is built. Because if they were to knock down that top, they cannot reestablish that height. And so it results crafty. It's crafty and it's nonsense. The city has so – I feel like this podcast might put me on the city staffers, you know, red list. So I don't want to say too much. And this is the thing, right? What sort of political system do you want to live in where you're afraid to speak out against this sort of regulatory overreach and bureaucracy? And when people look at why is housing so expensive to build in Boulder? Well, this is one of the reasons, because they make it hard. They make it very hard. And they being the rules and the people that enforce those rules. And they're humans. I'm not saying anything against them personally. I'm just saying that building in the city of Boulder is way harder than it should be. And and it's now going to move in the direction of more density. And that's been writing on the wall for at least the last 10 years. 55th and Arapahoe is going to be the next locus of massive development. But I've heard of other projects. I just heard yesterday of the redevelopment of the Waldorf School. And what I heard was 17 attached townhomes and 20 single family houses. And so basically Waldorf is selling a portion of their land to a developer. They're going to use that money to improve the school, maybe build a new school. I'm not entirely sure what they're doing. I had no idea the lot was that big. This is west of Broadway, north of downtown. It's just south of Wonderland. It's really adjacent. It's actually just slightly north of Wonderland Lake. It's just south of Lucky's on the left side, the west side of Broadway. There's the Waldorf School. And it's going to look radically different. I just learned about this yesterday. A lot more density is going in. But really, the nexus of development is not going to be west of Broadway. It's going to be, well, I guess Alpine Balsam is another massive development going in. But in the future, it's 55th and Arapahoe that is basically going to turn into Transit Village Part 2, where they're rezoning the entire area to allow and frankly incentivize higher density development. And those are probably going to be a lot of four-story apartment buildings. And unfortunately, most of those type buildings are pretty ugly. I hate to say it, but they're aesthetically not pleasing. And that's the stuff that's like been built at Pearl and 30th. I mean, we've sold property there. Okay. I'm
and
not
it looks
against,
good enough, you know?
Yeah. Does it?
Good enough. Right. Like it's got some aesthetic appeal to it.
Does it?
Does it really? I gave you my opinion.
Okay, all right. It's fine. We're different generations. Fine.
Yeah. You got to make do to an extent. But I don't know. I'm a little excited to see how things pan out because with increasing zoning and then all these interesting restrictions that Boulder has, and, you know, like I was talking about with the berm and the fence, there's a lot of opportunities for some very creative problem solving. And seeing kind of how density pans out in Boulder, considering kind of how dense it already is, I'm really curious. And then go ahead.
Not this election cycle, but the previous one. I asked a number of the candidates on Twitter and in person, is Boulder
built out? You're already on the radar.
And well, these are candidates. They're not the staffers. How many people would you say would make Boulder full? Like, at what point is Boulder full? How many people? And most of the candidates refuse to answer this question because they don't want to be hammered in. But one of them did, and basically more than doubled the population of Boulder. They were like 200,000 at least would be a good point of discussion. And I don't remember the specific candidates, but I gave this candidate at least some kudos for answering the question. The majority of the, particularly the progressive candidates, never want to talk about how many people is full, and they don't want Boulder to be full. And we have an affordability crisis in Boulder, and we've already dedicated 30% as a target for affordable housing in the city. And we have massive bureaucracy that supports that 30%. They're not usually purchase properties. You can't own them. You can only rent them, which is creating a perpetual underclass in Boulder. And it's problematic on so many fronts. And the construction itself, oh God, I'm going on a rant. The construction itself, they also never want to acknowledge the carbon footprint of what construction is. Construction is the most carbon intensive industry on the planet. And they're just like, whatever, we need more sustainable housing. Let's not talk about the carbon footprint. And so I'm probably going to get canceled after this podcast. No. Anybody listens to it. Yeah. Okay. Well, what do you take home from this election? One, Bob Yates got the most votes of any candidate, and it was only because of ranked choice voting that he lost the mayorship. Aaron Brockett retained it, and Aaron and Bob are both great. I feel very positive about both of those people in our city council, and there are lots of other people in city council that care about the job. And there are other people that have been carpetbagger type candidates that get on city council. They can barely finish their first term before they're running for some other office, and they're using it as a platform for their own political careers. Right. That is not what Bob and Aaron have at least done historically. They've been dedicated to our city, and I'm really grateful for both of them. And I'm grateful for the intelligent voters of Boulder that put these two candidates at the very top in the vote count. And ironically, Bob, who's probably the most conservative of the council members, gets the most funding and the most number of absolute votes prior to ranked choice. So that tells you something about who the real voters are in Boulder and the signal to noise ratio that they're getting from people agitating for more housing.
There's I saw a tweet yesterday about that, right? Where it's like Boulder's typically thought of as the progressive, very blue city, and then you peel it away a little bit, and it's like, oh, okay, you know.
I mean, I haven't seen this, but I bet you if you looked at, on a per capita basis, the amount of money we spend on homelessness and other social services, we've got to be off the charts. I mean, we're not quite San Francisco level, but we are definitely spending probably more than any other city, I would venture, more than any other city of our size per capita on social services for the homeless. And it's actually, we're trending in the wrong direction. We're getting more homelessness. We're getting more crime issues. It's a big deal. And yeah. And people are voting against, they're voting because they're tired of it. They're voting because they don't want to feel unsafe on the bike path. They're voting against it because they don't want their kids getting harassed by somebody suffering from mental illness on the way to school. And unfortunately, mental illness is not an issue that the city can solve by itself. It's a state and national level issue, and it's a large contributor to our the biggest issues in Boulder, housing and homelessness. And building more housing first cannot work. We cannot solve it at a city level that way. We don't have endless budget and endless land to build housing for anybody that wants to live in Boulder. And so we have lots of services, and those services also attract homeless people to live in our community. And it's 100% the case. And anybody that doesn't admit to those things is delusional or benefits directly from the industry of providing services.
We need a spot. Go ahead.
I'm getting the vibe. I should stop. I'm getting too political, and I'm going to stop. This is definitely the most political I've been on our podcast.
It's like we need a spicy meter for the podcast. like a little
meeting. Yeah. All right. I could be in a lot of trouble with Leah for going on a rant. But at the same time, I think it's important to be honest about these issues and choose candidates that. Take an honest and effective attitude and approach to solving these issues with things that actually might help and aren't just voting because they feel good. They're trying to vote from their guilty, from a sense of feeling guilty. They actually are trying to solve these issues and are honest about what works and what doesn't work and take the voters' concerns around safety seriously. Anyway, all right, that's enough about it. I'm not running for office, and I can say what I want. And I'm not a Republican, and I'm not a Democrat. I'm not registered. I'm an independent, for the record.
At some point, I'll become as involved or as aware of Westminster City politics, and maybe next year's Election Day podcast, I can opine on it. I'll have the same rants or something.
Well, Westminster is almost certainly better run and better managed, probably has fewer potholes, probably plows their streets better. And I got to say, you probably aren't scared to walk on the bike path because you're going to be accosted by somebody suffering mental illness like you might be in the city of Boulder in certain locations. Look, that's Boulder's fair. Still magical. It's beautiful.
The grass is greener on the other side always, though.
But I kind of feel like city council's job is to run the city, and instead we often end up on the political tangents. They're going to take a stance, I'm sure, on what's going on in the war in Israel any moment now. Of course they are. They're going to take up valuable time. There'll be public hearings on it just for our city to talk about it.
We want to do, yeah.
And meanwhile, it's like, can we just fix the infrastructure? Can we have city fiber? Can we fix the potholes on Canyon that have existed now for a year? The road is just insanely broken. I drive it every day.
Canyon Boulevard?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, Canyon. As you're driving toward the mountains between, let's say, 9th Street and 4th
Just that
Street,
little bit, yeah, right by the court is terrible.
I just got back from India in Goa, and I got to tell you, the streets in Goa are way better than that section of road. In fact, all the streets throughout India, none of them were that bad.
That section has always been bad, too. I don't know why. It just has been.
Yeah. If we can't fix the street on Canyon, we lack the technology and solutions. Do you really think we're going to solve a nationwide homelessness and mental illness problem at the city of Boulder?
We can set the trend off.
We can. We're never going to get to all the topics today. I got ranty. I apologize, everyone. Thank you for listening to me go on and on about local politics. I appreciate the space to talk about it and welcome any feedback. And I'm happy to sit down with any politician or politically involved person and have a cup of coffee.
Tell them what they're doing wrong.
No, and to listen, because I think it's time to come up with solutions that actually work. And I'm just fed up. You know, one of our clients wants to sell their house. They've only lived in Boulder a few years, and they've been accosted and harassed by the homeless downtown to the point where they feel unsafe. And that's not okay. That they've already bought a house out of town. They're planning to move. It's only a matter of time. And they're wonderful people, and they feel like they're bearing the price for our community's compassion towards those suffering mental illness and our coddling of this behavior. It's just I was in Spain 2 years ago, and I asked some of the locals why a year and 2 months ago, right? It was September 2022. I was in Spain for a week. Not this year. It was the previous year.
Okay.
And I saw one person flying a cardboard sign, and I asked the instructor of this course I was taking, why are there no homeless people running around Spain? And he said, because we just don't tolerate it. If people are suffering from mental illness and they're suffering in their housing situation, that's not an option. Our public spaces are not housing, and we won't tolerate it as a society.
Yeah.
And that doesn't mean that they're, you know, putting these people in, you know, in prison. They're actually giving them the mental health they need, the mental health care, and they're providing housing solutions, not in the city center. They're working with getting these people back integrated into productive life.
Yeah,
that contributes to our civilization.
I had something else. It's now gone. Though.
All right, let's get off this topic. We've covered some of the touchier stuff from the most recent election. I've gone on a rant about safety and homelessness, and it's time to move on to our next topic, demographics and neighborhoods.
Yeah, so the inspiration for this, when we were drafting up the talking points today, We met with a client yesterday who mentioned that they moved into a neighborhood that was largely older people. And that kind of just got my brain going. I moved this year as well. And the demographic around my neighborhood, I haven't really figured it out. Though I wanted to kind of touch on the experiences of that. And then also, you know, how do you change it? What makes a neighborhood and what's neighborly and all the things encompassing.
Yeah.
So,
I mean, it's not the first time I've heard that. So you were at this meeting, and to recap, these clients are thinking about selling their house, and actually they are, or they signed a listing agreement this week. And one of the things they mentioned about the neighborhood they bought in a few years ago is that it's a much older neighborhood. The demographics skew far older. They're one of the only younger families. They have two children, and that everyone else is in their 60s and 70s. And that's an issue for the entire city, that our population of homeowners in particular are much older. Mm. And that's because of how expensive housing is. And frankly, Boulder is an amazing place to live. So this is a continued issue, housing affordability, that affects the demographics. We've seen schools close. There are schools that are consolidating this year, elementary schools, because there are not enough kids. And so the more entry-level neighborhoods have more children, and the more expensive the housing in the neighborhood, the less likely you're going to see kids running around. And there are also other factors. So I sold a house a number of years ago on Devil's Thumb, which is a sub-neighborhood or a subdivision in Table Mesa. It's on the upper half. And these clients put their children in public schools. And within 6 months, they mentioned to me that they felt really out of place because most of the children of their friend, most of the friends of their children, those kids were at far lower socioeconomically than my clients. And they specifically said, and I still remember this, that they felt like they were treated like the rich people on the hill. And there was a disconnect for their kids because of that. And these clients decided to put their kids in private school because they didn't like feeling like the rich. Well, they said it was because they had special needs to address for these children. And maybe that was the real case. But I think a contributing factor was also that they felt like they're out of place in their kids' social circles. So 100%, it's a real issue. It's not one talked about frequently. And I got to add something before we go any further. And that's a little disclaimer here about fair housing. So housing in the United States has a long history of racism and prejudice, including the city of Boulder, which I was surprised by until I heard a talk by Ruth Flowers, who gave a talk at the high school. It's recorded. You can find it at the Carnegie Library. Maybe we can put it in the show notes, Hamish, where she talked about being a person of color and struggling in the 1950s, how people of color couldn't find trade jobs in Boulder. You had to go to Denver for that. When Martin Acres was being built, you couldn't get a trade job as a person of color. You were only allowed to have menial jobs. And the Goss Grove neighborhood was a redlined neighborhood. It was one of the few places people of color could live or were allowed to purchase or rent homes. And so that was very real, and racism was very real in the city of Boulder. But as somebody who works in the real estate space, I follow fair housing to the T. We don't discriminate against anybody, and we are particularly aware of protected classes. Now, with that said, I have been asked questions that are dangerous by potential buyers. So let me add one more piece. Before we go any further, obviously, I'm not a white human. My skin color is brown, and I grew up in upstate New York, which was probably less diverse than Boulder itself. And I have experienced far less racism here in Colorado than I remember experiencing growing up in upstate New York. But with that said, just the other day, Leah and I were walking in Longmont, and somebody on the street yelled out the N-word at me.
Seriously?
As they drove by, I haven't shared this story with you. They were in a car. It was a male voice. Well, it was a deeper male sounding voice. And as this car in a pickup truck drove by, he yelled the N-word at me as I was crossing the crosswalk parallel to Main Street in Longmont. Leah was there. She looked completely shocked.
Yeah, what?
And she's like, really? That your reaction? And yeah. And I was just like, look, it's going to be some 16-year-old boy who has been paying too much attention to racist stuff online in some social circle online, a Reddit subgroup, is feeling very threatened. And
thinks
because
it's
of
a joke.
Lack of success. Maybe thinks it's a joke, or thinks that, you know, because of lack of success in modeling and in his own life, has attached skin color as something to cling to feel superior. And hopefully somebody takes this aside and gives him a good whooping. Because holy
cow. With their words? Really,
well, with their words, right. And also learns to attach success metrics around contribution to community, education, support for people that need it, like doesn't attach skin color to something to be proud of. But whatever, I wasn't surprised to hear it. It's happened many times in my life. I've been called all sorts of things, and just like this person calling me the N-word, it's not even the right racial slur.
Yeah,
right? And when they don't even get the right racial slur, I'm like, it's offensive, but the degree of offense just tells me how ignorant they are.
Yeah,
and I hope this person gets educated. So with that said, racism still exists, but if you are a client of House Einstein and you ask to be put into a neighborhood that is of your skin color or your race or your religion, I can't do that.
Yeah.
And I have to hit the pause, but first,
nobody can do that, or nobody,
people do, and people are prejudiced, and people also feel more comfortable sometimes living in their own ethnic community. Mm-hmm. And that's why we have Little Italy. That's why we have little Chinatowns and little Indias all over the country, because people just feel more comfortable living with people of their own ethnic demographic or people of their own
culture,
of their own,
all of that.
Their own wealth level, that's another issue, their own education levels. So I'm okay with people choosing to do that. I think diversity is strength. But if people really want to live in that particular kind of enclave, I'm happy to help them find it. And we just have to be careful in how we approach this. So years ago, I had these clients who I started working with, and they were looking at neighborhoods, and they finally just came out and said it. And they were in their late 60s, and they said, Osman, we just want to live with people like us. And I was like,
you do.
You mean golfers? And that's what we did, is we looked at golf course neighborhoods. And I didn't hold prejudice against these people. I need to make a living and do my job. And I get why people feel more comfortable with people of their own ethnic or wealth classes. I don't personally hold it against them. We're not going to be best friends if you're a prejudiced person. You're obviously not that prejudiced because you're choosing me as your agent. Yeah. But we have to practice fair housing law. And it doesn't feel good if you tell me you want to live with people that look just like you. I still will do my best for you as a client. I'm not going to fire you for wanting that. I hope you consider other factors than race and wealth characteristics in the future neighborhood you want to live in.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, I kind of feel like that makes me a bad person, Hamish, to be willing to work with people who have prejudices. But well, everyone's got prejudices. Everyone has something conscious or subconscious.
It's also case by case. You know, I imagine.
I remember.
And this is entertainment, too.
I know this is entertainment, but sometimes you have to go to a sad place, right? Mm-hmm. And I remember my first visit to Pakistan when I was. Well, it wasn't my first. When I was 18, I went to visit Pakistan. And I remember talking to some extended family members. And one of the things that they said to me that startled me, and I'll never forget it, one of them said, you know, how can you stand living with so many black people? And I was like, what are you talking about? And they're like, don't you feel unsafe? There's so much crime in New York. It's all these black people. And Do you even know a black person, or have even you interacted at all with somebody of color other than brown? I mean, and I was like, and I realized, no, they haven't. The population of black people in India and Pakistan is tiny.
Yeah.
I mean, probably combined is 1,000 people. I mean, we're talking about a really very small population. So they have no direct experience, but what they have is what they get from the media.
Mm.
And what they got from the media back then was portrayal of black people as criminals. I knew a friend whose family prohibited her from watching Sanford and Sons in the 70s because Sanford and Sons depicted black people living in a junkyard. And only as an adult do I think about how horrible that is for people that have no experience. They're just consuming media and they start to develop subconscious and conscious prejudices against people of color, people that don't look like you.
Mm-hmm.
And so everyone has subconscious prejudice. And microaggressions are real. I believe all of that. But at the same time, we follow fair housing law. And I really would like to drag our friends and clients into the light where they think about their subconscious prejudices. But if they say they want to live with people that are just as wealthy and just as whatever they look like, I will try to help them in a way that doesn't violate fair housing. And I won't hold a whole bunch of personal judgments against them.
Fun topics today.
I know. Edgy.
Yeah.
We're going to get edgy. That's what this week's podcast, we're getting edgy. We're going to talk about things that people are scared to talk about.
Yeah.
So, Hamish, you mentioned in this topic list some of the downsides of being a younger person moving into a neighborhood with older people. So you recently bought a house.
Yeah. And
some of your neighbors. Yeah.
This wasn't necessarily about my, again, right? Like the inspiration was from those clients the other day, but then I was thinking, you know, maybe I have something to pitch in. I have actually, I think a generally pretty healthy mix of demographics in the neighborhood. It is not very diverse in color. And that was one of the first things that I was told by my neighbor, who said it proudly. My roommate and friend Ben and I were just walking down the street after closing and kind of, you know, oh my God, a house, is this real type of thing? And we met some neighbors up the street and started chatting to them. And this is fine.
I'm fine with it. Go for it.
Oh, yeah.
Just be careful to, you know, this is a family podcast.
Oh, yeah.
Sort of. You can see what she, I'm okay with it. Yeah.
I'm sure that the 6-year-olds are really into the real estate topics, but family. So, yeah, we meet these neighbors and they're like, yeah, they're selling us the neighborhood, which is kind of fun because, you know, we'd already bought in, we're here. But she goes, you know, yeah, it's a really good neighborhood. You know, everybody's really on top of their stuff. And she kind of looks around and she goes, it's a white neighborhood. And like, both Ben and I are kind of just, when you hear stuff like that in the moment, especially when dealing with the person, it's not even worth engaging. So we're just like, oh yeah, sure. And then right after we leave, we're like, what? So we've got those types of neighbors, which is diversity from us because we don't think that way. So neighbor across or next to my house, they're pretty young. It seems like they're relatively working professionals, you know, 9 to 5. And then I've got a older guy on the other side of my house and he's great, works on his cars a bunch and stuff, but not so much as a drawback for me, it's like, there's the stereotypical neighborly relationship type of thing that you see in media. And then you have like the neighborly horror stories. And then you have the neighbors that you can go grab get a jug of milk if you need it, or a cup of flour if you're making something and realize you don't have it. And, maybe it's not even a question, but I'm just curious, you know, I don't feel that here. I feel like everybody's kind of head down on the grindstone, trying to make their life work and get it together. But I don't have that sense of community. And I wonder if that's a thing you can build. For some context too, I'm total suburbia here. This is a 70s development with houses on houses, backyards up to backyards. It's not like Osmond up in the mountains. So, yeah.
Wow. I mean, I think it's similar to Martin Acres.
Yeah.
Your neighborhood, right?
Yeah, I think that's almost a direct comparison, yeah.
Yeah. Wow, people surprise you, and over time, you make friends. And a lot of the superficial differences fall away. And it's easy to assume things about people because of their age or their skin color or their faith. And as you get to know people, you realize that humans are humans. And I honestly do believe in diversity as strength, even when it's not the conventional diversity of that maybe most people think of. And so, for example, when I first moved to Martin Acres, I knocked on the door of this house because I was in the market for a motorcycle. And this is 2005. And there was a KLR, which is a dual sport motorcycle, that has just been sitting in front of this house, in front of the driveway for what appeared to be weeks, months. And one day I just knocked on the door and I asked the person who answered, would you ever consider, you know, hi, my name's Osmond. I'm not selling newspaper subscriptions or anything else.
I'm
your neighbor. Yeah. I live down the street. And I noticed you got this motorcycle out front. I thought maybe, you know, you don't really ride it. Maybe you would be interested in selling it. Of course, I was looking for a deal. and he just looked at me and he's like, no, I'm not selling it. Goodbye. And shut the door. And I was like, okay. Well, that guy's kind of curmudgeon-y, and I'm going to avoid that guy. And it turned out the complete opposite, right? So maybe later that year, I met up with him again at a motorcycle event, a dual sport event. I ended up riding with him. I bought a motorcycle. I was very much a novice. He had been riding for many years, and he sort of took me under his wing. And we've now been friends with Ned for coming up on 20 years. Yeah, we've known each other for 18 years. Wait a minute. Hold on. Let me do the math really quick.
For, I guess, a little bit of context, Ned is a great friend of Osmond's.
Yeah. Ned is one of our closest friends.
Yeah.
And despite the initial curmudgeonly interaction, we ended up being very close friends. And we went to Burning Man with him. I've gone to Burning Man with him. He's come along with Leah and I on family vacations to visit my parents. He's really one of our closest friends, and to the point where, you know, he's getting a little up there, and we've had conversations about what happens when he might need some assistance in life because his sons don't live anywhere nearby, and we're like, well, there's no doubt what we would do. Whatever we need to do to have him live with us or take care of him, we'll do. He's the family we choose. And sometimes the family you choose is even closer than the family you're born into. So he is 100% part of our family now. And very diverse, different background, different you know, all sorts of things. And he's older than my parents.
That's
but
great.
He's one of our he's
probably our closest friend in Boulder. Yeah. So that's what I think of when I think of diversity. Is it's not just skin color, it's age, it's faith, it's life experiences. And when you have that on your business team, you make better business decisions because these people will share experiences that are not. If you have everyone that looks the same and thinks the same, you're going to be making decisions in a vacuum of that sameness.
Yeah.
And the richness of different cultures, faiths, ethnic backgrounds and experiences is what makes life really rewarding. And Boulder actually has a lot of it, despite whipping ourselves with the hair shirt and beating ourselves to death over how monoculture we are. We're not. We have such a rich Tibetan community, a Nepali community. We have tons of Indians that live in Boulder, I think, and I've gotten to know more and more of them since I started a social club for people that are of Desi background. It's actually a fantastic place to live, and we do have a lot of diversity, but it's not always obvious, especially in the Latino community, because the light-skinned Latino community often passes as white, and you don't realize how different they can be. And we have quite a few international people here, and CU brings huge numbers of international students to our community. I'm very grateful for the diversity we have here.
Yeah, Boulder in general feels more neighborly, I would say, to most of the other places that I've lived. I lived in suburban Broomfield for a little while with my grandparents, and they knew the neighbors on their cul-de-sac, but they didn't know them. You know, they knew their names and that's about it. So there's also that side of things where I'm thinking about what it means to be a neighbor and that's that stuff. And my example, my model, right, has been know they exist. And that's as much as I know. But you can't deny the convenience. Imagine if my best friend is next door. I mean, how cool is that, right? It takes some personal action too. I always wonder, if we're all hanging out on the back patio and then another neighbor comes out on the back patio. That seems like a pretty organic way to start a neighborly friendship or something.
Yeah.
What's that sitcom where they're chatting over the 6-foot fence? There's so many.
Family Guy, maybe?
Is it Family Guy? It's like a Tim Allen or something. It's one of those. Okay. Yeah.
Okay. I mean, when the pandemic just started, we were still living in Martin Acres. And it was the community really came together. We had music events in the neighborhood, which were socially distanced music events. We had lots of happy hours outside. Leah and I would sit on our front porch and connect with the neighbors in a very intimate way and very friendly way. There's something about a neighborhood, and sometimes you got to give it a chance. And some neighborhoods are better designed for those social interactions. That's why front porches exist, right? Mm. So having a nice front porch allows you to interact with people walking their dog. It's just a different experience. And so it's not something that it's very easy to put a qualitative rating on.
Yeah.
You have to go experience this neighborhood. And there are compromises, right? Because you could also have a neighbor who's a disaster and a neighbor who's got all sorts of uncomfortable things going on. So living in the mountains is a different sort of community. We're 20 minutes outside of town now, and we have actually our neighbors are coming over for dinner tonight in about two hours. And we look forward to seeing them and connecting with them. And they literally are right across the
which is
dirt
road. Atypical too, right? For most mountain homes to my,
I don't know if that's true. I think people, are neighborly. It just takes,
oh, not the neighborly, they're just the proximity.
Oh, yeah, so their house is not even visible from any window in our house. They just happen, the way the homes were designed was intended to keep privacy. Mm-hmm. But you can have homes that are this close together in all sorts of scenarios in the mountains. It all just depends.
Yeah.
But the community centers are a little different in the mountains. So the fire department, for example, on Sugarloaf is a vibrant nexus of community. And people come together for fundraising efforts, craft sales. It's a big deal, and volunteering too. And also there's a huge party that's thrown every year on Sugarloaf and the fire department. Jamestown has the same thing going on with their 4th of July party. It's really cool. It's different But it's not necessarily worse or better than the communities you'll find in Newlands or Mapleton Hill with its Porch Fest or Martin Acres with its annual garage sale and Pancake Breakfast. Like, there are all these events that bring people together. And it's from a real estate, you know, putting on that real estate hat, it's an important thing to talk about if you're shopping for homes, what sort of community you're looking for.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, an open-ended question, you know, you get from buyers is, well, is this a good neighborhood? And it's like, you gotta, you know, is there a little bit more specifics? Because my idea of a good neighborhood could be entirely different than somebody else. And it boots on the ground type of deal. And then also all the little factors that you brought up, Osman, are pretty crucial when guiding buyers on neighborhoods.
Yeah, well, and what phase of life? Mm-hmm. So schools are really, for people with kids of school age, that is one of the biggest factors for community, the school events. And all of the public schools in Boulder are deeply invested in the communities from which the kids come from. And there are all sorts of events throughout the year. And all of our clients that have sold, bought homes in these neighborhoods rave about the schools, and that becomes a factor in relocation. So that's really one of the reasons we connect them to people that live in those neighborhoods that can talk about the schools, because it's not just about the education in terms of test scores. Mm-hmm. There's more going on.
One thing,
you know, go ahead.
You're still probably talking a little bit more relevant to the topic. So you go ahead.
No, it's okay. Okay. You can take us on a side journey.
I feel like to actually meet neighbors in the neighborhood that I'm in, I have to have a dog. It feels like a requirement. Everyone and their dog, like, is walking around. It's only, and then you see like neighbors talking with other neighbors, but they all have dogs. You can't, you know, it feels like an exclusive club where you have to pay for pet insurance. And I don't, you know,
like, well, it's true.
I like dogs, but
having a dog definitely makes it easier to meet your neighbors. Yeah. I mean, you could always just walk a stuffed animal, Hamish, and see how that goes.
I'd go, yeah. Here's the normal guy that got a house and walks a stuffed animal. He's totally approachable.
I mean, there really should be a business for renting puppies or renting young dogs to meet people in parks and in neighborhoods. You could just offer to walk your neighbor's dog.
It's not a bad idea. I mean, shoot.
Well, we just lost Jackson, and I will say that we're missing him a lot. And one of the side benefits of having a dog is they make you go out, get out of the office and go walk. And now that more and more jobs are work from home, Boulder has always been, or at least for the last two decades, has been high percentage of work from home, like 40% or something like that. But if you are lucky enough to work from home or privileged enough to work from home, then having a dog becomes much easier and forces you to take mental breaks, which is really good for productivity and happiness.
And they're fluffy. And I mean, it's, can't really beat that.
And they're fluffy.
Yeah.
I'm a big favor of getting a dog. Yeah. Obviously, we'd have to work around your work schedule a little bit having a dog, but we would figure it out. I'm sure it would be fine.
There you go, audience, you know, on video, Osman giving me his blessing.
I can't control whether you get a dog or not. I'm just saying we would accommodate your work schedule, so we would figure it out. It doesn't matter. This is, well, we don't need to have this topic of conversation. No. we don't track your hours, Hamish. You're not an hourly employee. As long as the work gets done, it doesn't matter.
Productivity plus.
Yeah. So I'm on the record as saying that. So I don't think we're going to have time to talk about the North Boulder Library. There's a lot to that topic, and it dovetails with the conversation we had on homelessness and crime. It was something the neighbors were really concerned with and fought the library, organized to fight it, delayed it to some extent, but ultimately the neighbors lost. And some of those people even moved out of the neighborhood. And I've heard some negatives already from some of our neighbors, including the ones that walk by with dogs that we're really happy to see. Andy, if you're listening, I'm talking about you. That's the German Shepherd mix that lives on our street. And always enthusiastic to see Andy. And, of course, your owners who are lovely people. But it's really, I'm really just want to see the dog.
It's all about the dog. See? You have to have a dog. But
Andy's owner did mention to me that she saw a guy that she believes was smoking crack in a car right across from our office. And we are talking about fortifying the windows, because right now the windows are like an aquarium to a nice living room with a fridge that may or may not have some beer in it. And so, you know, having that celebratory is not champagne. Great. Yeah, we have celebratory closing gift champagne bottles in that fridge. And so, you know, I think we have to do some stuff to fortify our office now and hopefully not lose its open, inviting nature to the street. But we won't talk about that. I think we can leave that topic alone. We've talked about homelessness. We've talked about crime. I'm excited that the library is going to be opening hopefully sometime soon. I'm cautiously optimistic that it won't become a magnet. And that the services it offer will add a lot of quality and vibrancy to our community in Uptown, where our office is. And let's just leave it at that. Unless, do you have anything else to add on that topic?
When I was in middle school, I was here for half a semester before I moved back to New Zealand and then ultimately back here. And we were part of a group in science class that went to the Boulder Public Library to do research. And it was very cool.
Yeah.
So
I love libraries. Just for the record, yeah. I used to bicycle in elementary school to the library. I spent so much time in the public library. I've even looked at it on Google Maps to see if that library is still there. I remember getting access to the adult section and able to take out adult books when I was like in sixth grade. That was really cool. It's just, I don't know, libraries changed my life. And when I first moved to Boulder, I spent a lot of time in the library. The internet access was fine. I used the terminals. I read the periodicals.
They do have go ahead.
The cafe that crosses the creek has been fantastic. Look, I'm a huge proponent of libraries, but libraries shouldn't be service providers for the homelessness community. Mm-hmm. And that's a problem, because especially if they're suffering mental illness or they're smoking meth in the bathrooms, it's creating an unsafe space for everyone else. And that problem has got to be fixed. And that's why people are fought the library. And I'm hopeful, I'm cautiously optimistic that it won't turn into a magnet for those problems, and that it becomes attended by children and school groups and adds a lot of value to our community.
I agree. Libraries just have a magic to them, especially growing up. So, you know, hoping for net positive here.
We'll see.
Yeah.
At this point, to some extent, it killed our view. We knew that was coming. But yeah, it's a library. And there's no getting off this roller coaster. We're on this ride. And we're going to find out.
Yeah. We'll see. So
we'll see.
What's do we have any kind of exciting, fun topic to cap this? Some sort of good news or a joke?
Well, I think by the time you listen to this, it'll be Thanksgiving. Because of our podcast publication schedule, even at two per week that we're going to try to push out, we're so far behind that these podcasts are delayed. So I hope if you're listening to this over Thanksgiving, you have an opportunity to be with friends and family and those you love. I hope you get a nice Thanksgiving meal wherever you are, whether you are housed or not. I hope that people take care of you and express kindness and compassion and have great conversations. Don't ask me about politics if you're at my dinner table. We're going to be in New York, and inevitably my sister is going to want to talk about politics. So we probably will, but we mostly agree on things.
Yeah.
How about you, Hamish? Do you have Thanksgiving plans?
Just for Thanksgiving Day, family up in Broomfield, and we usually do the Thanksgiving thing as a expat. Yeah, immigrant. Nah, I don't know. Thanksgiving's kind of a new cultural thing for me, even though I've been here for X amount of years. It's still a little different, but it's nice being gathered around the table with family. So, looking forward to that.
I mean, it's my favorite holiday. Personally, it's the only one that doesn't involve spending a lot of money on things. My second favorite is Halloween, but Thanksgiving is definitely my favorite. It's about bringing friends and family and sometimes even complete strangers into your home, and connecting with them as humans. And it's just a beautiful thing. So I hope that you have that experience.
Oh, yeah.
As a recent, you immigrated here as a child.
No,
so I don't
so
know
long ago. Yeah, no, I know.
But okay, fair enough. You're an immigrant. I mean, true. It's just
I don't know.
New Zealand does not celebrate does not celebrate.
Or Halloween. We had neighbors that lived the house above us in New Zealand, and they, I mean, very few people celebrate Halloween there. So when the trick-or-treaters that did celebrate came by, they would just squirt them with squirt guns and terrorize them a little bit. Yeah. I was good friends with those people. But.
All right. On that note, I think it's a good spot to end this podcast. So thank you for joining us. If you'd like to learn more about what we do for work professionally, it's at HouseEinstein.com. I hope you found the podcast educational and interesting. And we always welcome your comments, especially if they're positive and constructive. But even if they're not, I'm happy to read them. And you know where to reach us if you'd like to find us at HouseEinstein.com.